Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, happy pie baking day, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Lynn Reardon from Austin, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for November 23rd, 2011, episode 278, sponsored by the awesome Back on Track and Good Morning Horse World.
Guess what? It's Wednesday.
Well, good morning, Lynn, and thank you so much for filling in for Jamie today.
Well, thank you for having me, Glenn, and good morning to you, too.
Oh, you know, it's so much fun to have other co-hosts on sometime, and of course, we've had you on this show before, and we're going to talk a little bit about what you do down there for new listeners, but I've always, ever since I talked to you probably, what, a year or two ago now, I said, got to have Lynn on as a co-host sometime, and it just worked out today, so I do appreciate you joining us the day before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'm really happy to do it. It's just making the holiday start off perfectly for me.
Well, great. Well, we have a terrific show planned for today, and you're getting some love already on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning. Kelly Utter, who's a regular listener to the show, says, hooray, Lynn is the best. Give her love from the volunteers at Canner Mid-Atlantic.
Canner Mid-Atlantic is one of my favorite organizations. I volunteered for them before I started my own organization here, and it's all their fault that I do this work. They got me hooked on working with racehorses, and I can't say enough good things about Canner Mid-Atlantic, Kelly, and Allie Conrad there. So double shout back and love to them, too.
Kelly is a terrific listener. She contributes a lot to the show on Facebook, and we love having her listening. So, and we're going to be talking a little bit about Virginia today, a little later in the show. So let's find out. Jennifer has a jam-packed show for us today, so let's find out what's going on.
On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, it's all about horses and parties and parties and horses. Karen Wilson, winner of the Virginia Field Hunter Championships, is here to enlighten us about that time-honored competition for fox hunters. And I'm sure that we will be talking about the fantastic tailgating parties that go along with it. And the Horse.com's Horse Health Report is here with an AAEP convention wrap-up. Today, we will find out if what happens in Austin stays in Austin. And for entertainment's sake, let's hope not. Stay tuned for the Turkey Day Party.
Thank you, Jennifer. And, you know, I doubt there's any drinking that goes on at a fox hunting competition, right?
No way. No, lots of milk. Lots of milk.
Yeah. My Daily Winnie goes out today to Sandy and Frankie Lovato, regular contributor here to the show, our favorite jockey Frankie. What's their anniversary? They're 29 years together. So congratulations to Sandy and Frankie. All I can say is Sandy has to have the patience of a saint. And also to our military stations around the world. We're thinking about you this Thanksgiving. You're away from home and your loved ones and your family and friends. So we're thinking about you, and we're sending good thoughts your way. And, of course, Jamie's husband's in the military, and we have several in the military in our family as well. So our thoughts and prayers to all the military around the world.
And I have a couple of daily winnies, too. My first one would be for McLeod Pharmaceuticals. They invited me to come down to their booth during the AAP convention just last weekend, and their big guest there was Kate Tweedy. She's the author of Secretariat's Meadow and also is Penny Chenery's daughter, who owns Secretariat.
Yes.
And Kate did this fantastic book signing there. She sold almost 300 books and donated a share of the proceeds to LOPE. And thanks to McLeod and to Kate, we raised almost $1,500 that went promptly into our alfalfa fund, making me and the horses very grateful this Thanksgiving. So huge shout-out and Winnie to them both.
Wow, that's terrific. She was the little one that was in the movie.
She was the rebellious teenager. And, yeah, the hippie teenager.
Does she still look like a hippie chick?
No, but she, you know, she told some great stories about going to, she went to UT Austin, so she has all of these roots, and her parents were a little concerned about that because it was such a, you know, sort of, I guess what you say, avant-garde kind of hippie town, and there she was kind of in her environment, but she did really well
like
there
a,
and loved it.
So she really, like in the movie, she really was kind of this 60s hippie activist.
Yes, only with much worse language. She said she was not nearly as polite as she was in the Disney film. That was slightly enhanced for viewer pleasure, yeah. So.
Well, it's terrific that they did that for you, though.
It is, and it was such a huge help. And then I met so many terrific vets, and in fact, the Smart Pack people came up and gave Lope some donations of products. And it was just a fantastic opportunity for us, and we're just really grateful for it. So without McLeod Pharmaceuticals and Kate Tweedy, we would just never would have had access to that event. So,
well, that's terrific, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about the AAP later on in the day with the horse. So, you told us some things that didn't stay in Austin already before the show, so hopefully we'll bring those up.
Yes.
Dr. Jones later on in the day. Tell us, for the new listeners out there, tell us about LOPE, and it stands for Lone Star Outreach to Place Ex-Racers, and you're out of Texas, so tell us a little bit about LOPE and what you do.
Well, what we do, Glenn, is we work with the racing industry to help ex-racehorses find new homes. So we do that through our adoption farm. Our race trainers and race owners will donate their horses to us, and we'll put them through a physical and sometimes a mental rehab to kind of get them ready for a new career, assess their skills, so to speak, and kind of restart them into riding. We also do a website listing service. We call it Craigslist for racehorses, where people who like to work with thoroughbred or quarter horse or Arabian X racehorses can find the trainers that need to find their horses' homes. And between all of those things, we have placed over 850 horses in the last few years.
Really?
And we do, and we do a lot of work just trying to kind of, I guess you'd say, promote the X-race horse and a lot of horsemanship education. You know, I was a complete idiot when I started this organization. I didn't know how to really train horses.
But you weren't even a horse person, were you?
I really wasn't. I used to hand feed horses treats and wonder why they bit me. And so really I ended up having to learn a lot, you know, from the horses and from other more experienced trainers. And we share a lot of this information, you know, whatever we're learning in the moment. And we found that that really helps, too, because the ex-race horses kind of have that reputation, I guess you'd say like pit bulls do in the dog adoption world. And they're really not like that. They're really good horses. Otherwise, I'd be dead because I really wasn't very skilled, like I said. So they really worked with me. And so that's what we do. It's really rewarding work. And I just, you know, every year I'm just really, again, just that theme of thankfulness, thankful that I found this work and that I get to work with these horses every day.
Well, and as you know, we've had many OTTBs throughout the years. Jennifer and I and Jamie has one currently that she's working with and doing very well with, actually.
That's great.
Jack. So, you know, we're big believers in that. We have an adopted greyhound. So we're believers in taking them off the racetrack and giving them some love, which is really what they need. They need some love, and they need some people there for them. And most of them, when they get that, turn into really great horses.
They really do. They're very loyal to their people. And we've also found if you can just slow it down a little bit, they've been rushed a lot early in their life, and they really all secretly want to be couch potatoes at heart, I think. And so it's just, it is. We just appreciate that you guys do that too, that you're fans of the X-Racehorse as well.
And Lynn, I think we're going to have you call back. Are you hearing the feedback there, Jennifer? We're going to have to probably get Lynn to hang up.
I am not hearing it on my end, but, you know.
Okay, good. Well, that's good then. All right, then it's probably just me. Well, that's terrific, Lynn. And, I am so happy that you've done as well as you have with Lope because, you know, you really did, for a person that knew nothing about horses, to take on X-Racers when they're coming off the track and some of them aren't quite wound down from the cocktails yet, it's a challenge when you first get started. And you explained a little bit about that challenge in a terrific book you did.
Yes, I wrote a book called Beyond the Home Stretch. And I love the subtitle of the book. It's What Saving Racehorses Taught Me About Starting Over, Facing Fear, and Finding My Inner Cowgirl, which really does kind of sum up what it was like. And I kind of chronicle in the book how I made that transition, first of all, and also just all of the entertaining characters that helped me learn all of this, both human and equine, that I encountered, plus the kind of Texas culture clash. You know, I grew up in Northern Virginia, kind of East Coast area, and wandered into this strange new world called Texas. And all of those things came together and gave me a very fascinating journey and also a pretty humorous one, too. And so I finally wrote it all down in the book.
Well, the book is terrific. I highly recommend it as a Christmas gift idea for anybody. If you're buying a book for any horse lover in your family, Beyond the Home Stretch is one you should add to the list. It's available at Amazon now. Just search for Beyond the Home Stretch and you'll find it, or Lynn Reardon, which is R-E-A-R-D-O-N. And you'll find it on Amazon. It's a stocking stuffer. It's not an expensive book. So you'll be just fine that way. You could give this as a barn gift to anybody in the barn. It would be it's a terrific book and a terrific gift. And it really does explain your story in a somewhat humorous way, too.
Right. What we always tell people is that no horses die in the book, because that's really important. My own mother would not read the book until I told her that. So it's not the kind of book where you're reading and you're really fond of this little black filly in the third chapter and then she's dead by chapter 8. It's not like that at all.
Okay.
And also, a share of the royalties go to help the horses at Lope. So when you buy the book, you're actually helping the horses here. And so it's a philanthropic effort as well as a literary one.
How many horses are at Lope right now?
Right now we have 10, and we have a pretty good-sized waiting list. We're about to bring some more to the farm and maybe have some go into a very small, devoted foster home network, and because we don't like to spread them all over the place. We like to keep them with people that we know. So we are anticipating even more horses coming to our waiting list, given the hay and kind of alfalfa situation here in Texas. So we're about to bring more in, and we're also planning, you know, for the future, wanting to set aside some extra funds, raise some extra funds, so that we can take care of more as the winter progresses.
Well, that's terrific. And how long do they usually stay there with you before they're adopted out? Is there an average length of stay?
You know, it depends. We always have one or two slots for long-term horses, meaning horses that might have a longer-term injury or might have more limitations. And those horses, it might take up to 8 to 10 months to adopt out. And then, you know, some horses come to us perfectly sound and calm, and they can be adopted in as short as a month. So the average is probably about 3 to 4 months. We like to give them some letdown and turnout time, even if they're perfectly calm, just so that they have that little vacation break, that little horse Disneyland experience before going on to the next job. And we like to get to know them just a little bit, Glenn, so that we have some ability to pass information along to the new adopter and kind of go, well, this horse likes to kind of keep things slow, or this horse really likes to go do athletic things. So that helps us make a better match from the start.
I think that's important, too. When we adopted our first greyhound, we got her right off the track. I mean, we had never met her before. We just showed up, and they said, here's your dog.
Wow.
And that was the way that adoption agency in Pennsylvania worked, because they did adopt out so many greyhounds, which was a great thing. The one down here in Kentucky was a little different. They put all of theirs into foster homes first so that they do get to know the personality. So when we adopted this last one just over the summer, we almost knew exactly what we were getting because we were able to talk to the foster mommy and find out the personality quirks and the little things that we didn't know when we got our first one. I think that's really important, especially when it comes to an animal like a horse.
Yeah, and I think it helps set up the horse for success in the new home. You know, 90% of our adoptions, interestingly enough, most of the horses go to trail pleasure riding homes, meaning not highly competitive show homes, maybe, you know, schooling shows. And usually it's intermediate riders. And so one of the reasons that that happens, I think, is that we give them the good letdown time, and then we really look at their personalities and match them up to the riders. And that way you can have a rider who isn't, you know, a show jumper pro trainer adopting these horses and having a really good experience with them. And let's face it, most of our horses weren't the best at racing or else they wouldn't be coming to Lope. So a lot of them really like the idea of going slower to begin with.
These are the ones that got gelded and are not out for stud.
Exactly, exactly. They were immediately gelded, right, exactly.
We are not going to reproduce this.
This is not, nothing good is coming from that, right.
Well, now, you also, we had you on the show a little while ago, and I wanted to chat with you about this a little bit, is the situation in Texas. It's been a very, very difficult year for Texas between floods and between drought, extreme drought,
extreme
floods, fires, and everything else you've had going on down there. Can you sort of give us an update on what it's like in Texas right now?
Sure. I mean, right now, what's happened basically for people who don't know is that Texas goes through these cycles of drought, and this has been one of the worst ones. I think it's been 80 years since we've had one this bad. And an 80-year drought cycle in Texas is epic. I mean, because even an average drought can be intense. Can be very tropical here. So what has happened essentially for 2011 is we didn't get any rain for most of the year. And that completely killed off the hay crop. And then we had a series of wildfires that swept through, actually not too far from our ranch. We had to be evacuated at one point and destroyed a lot of forest, destroyed a lot of pasture land as well, kind of insult to injury. And, of course, displaced a lot of horse owners. It was very, very difficult. In addition, where the floods did happen, while they didn't happen someplace that could help us, say, in Texas, they happened in neighboring states where we might be getting hay normally from. So a lot of the southern southeast states that maybe we would have been trucking hay in from have been underwater for most of the hay growing season. So what's happening here is that hay is being trucked in out of state from further and further away than it would be normally. It's poorer quality because of that. And it's very, very expensive. And so what you're seeing is a lot of people who maybe normally would be fine for the winter for their horses, they're running out of hay and they're running out of funds. And there's a lot more horses that are in need of placement or assistance. And it's just been a very difficult year for horse owners in Texas. Now, the positive is that there's been some good alfalfa crops further north. It's still very expensive, but it is available. So,
what are you paying now? Did you buy it by the bale or are you buying round bale?
I buy by the bale because round bales and ex-race horses sometimes don't match up when they come right off the track.
True.
Sometimes they can have ulcers. Yeah, I'd love to go round bales, but I go square bales per our vet's instructions. Square bales now, if you go into a feed store, anywhere from $12 to $14 a bale, and they're average quality at best. Alfalfa is running $15 to $17 a bale in feed stores. And it's also, it's better quality, but you still have to pay attention to where it's coming from. Our local feed store got a large load of alfalfa from a northern state, and it was 500 bales, and he opened up the first two bales before he would pay for the load, and they were full of white mold, and he sent the whole load back. So you have to be very cautious and make sure you're getting your hay and alfalfa, even more than usual, from people who are reputable, because there's a lot of that kind of thing going on because people are so desperate for it. And so we deal with, you know, people that we know, and we're paying more like everybody else because it's worth it for the quality. You have to do it. So when we say we are looking at our waiting list, the reason we don't have 30 horses here right now is we have to make sure that we've raised enough funds to pay for feeding those horses throughout the winter because adoption rates are down as well. Obviously, people aren't going, hey, I'd like to have four more horses and there's no hay. So we have to assume whatever we take in, we may be feeding until the spring. And that's just good bookkeeping, you know.
So
we have fundraisers going on and things like that. That's why, you know, Kate Tweedy and McLeod Pharmaceuticals helping us out so much was a big deal because it allowed us to buy, you know, quite a bit more alfalfa than we would have right now. So that's the situation. It's it's not completely grim. I mean, there are a lot of people pulling together and a lot of horse people really trying to figure it out. But if people want to help, you know, pick a favorite charity, a horse charity in Texas, and send them money or send them alfalfa, because that's really what the main priority is now. It's just one of those times, one of those years where you kind of go, okay, it's going to be difficult till the spring, and hopefully we'll continue slowly to get more rain. And we had a big rain here yesterday, and there was a lot of dancing in the streets. So, you know, we actually have mud puddles in the driveway for the first time in, like, literally 8 months. So,
yeah, and we, you know, we think we live in Lexington, Kentucky, so we're used to our horses having all of the lush grass. And this year's been especially rainy, so we've had it's still bright green outside. And that's something, you know, we forget about. The horses in Texas, many of them haven't seen a blade of grass in a year or two.
Exactly. I mean, it's just been very intense. And, you know, then even the hay pastures that irrigate, because the ground has been so hard for so long, the irrigation can't soak in enough, and so the crop comes up weaker and weaker. You know, nothing substitutes for true rain, and you can only irrigate to a certain point and get a certain degree of crop back. And of course, then you're killing the soil. Ultimately, you still have to rest the soil. So, yeah, it's just, again, we try not to be too gloom and doom about it, but it's definitely something that all of the horse adoption and horse charities are completely consumed by right now here.
Wow. Well, we wish everybody in Texas the best of luck with that. I know there are a lot of people giving up their horses. From a report I read the other day, that the number is four times what it usually is.
That's correct.
Just because, you know, when you're looking at spending $15, $20 a bale for hay, that's just hard. I mean,
I remember when
we had our big farm and had all those horses on it, if we had to pay $4, we thought it was a lot. You know,
and
we were paying
two
or three.
And the fuel cost is what's adding to that, too. You know, when fuel costs are high, then when you're trucking in out of state, then that's why the price stays so high, because there's no opportunity for it to – there's no place to cut the expense, so to speak. So, but, you know, what will happen, the first 2 years we lived here, Glenn, our place flooded. So we had these – we live on a 100-year floodplain that flooded twice in 2 years. Thank you very much. And so we thought when we first moved to Texas, Texas floods. And now a few years later, it's like Texas never gets rain. So you learn when you live here to kind of adapt and not get too panic-stricken, but you do make – I've become a lot more, I guess, what you'd call a careful planner. And I feel a lot of empathy for farmers. You know, I never really think about farmers until you live in such an ag state like this and you realize how dependent you are on the climate for, you know, things like hay and food. So bless the farmers for what they put up with this every year all over the country.
Yeah, and we always said there's never a happy farmer. There's always something.
Yeah, there's always something to be depressed about somewhere, I know.
Well, let's get on to a little bit happier
topic.
And that's Thanksgiving is tomorrow. So
that's right.
Now, you usually, I think horse people, and I know we were this way when we had our big farm, you either one way or the other. You'll go out and you want to spend extra time with your horses on Thanksgiving, or you go out and you get the barn done and you get away from the horses for a day and you spend it with family and you do the bare minimum. Which one are you?
We hang out more with the horses. What we do, because I'm the world's worst cook, like my signature dish is toast. That's my
big thing.
That
makes you a horsewoman is what it makes
you. Yes, I'm a total horsewoman. Domestically challenged is how I put it. But what we do is we go to Whole Foods is in Austin, which is the most awesome store ever, and we get the pre-made turkey and pumpkin pie and wine, and we have a romantic Thanksgiving dinner here, and I get to ride all day if I want to, and my husband reads books, and then we go see friends and family over the weekend. And so we get the kind of perfect mix. But for Thanksgiving, I've always liked being kind of quiet at home, no visitors, horseback riding, reading, good food that I don't have to cook, and some white wine, and it's just awesome. It's like one of my favorite holidays of the year. And then we think a lot about like all the things we're grateful for and how lucky we are. And for me, that means spending time with the horses.
Well, Jennifer, this is a woman after your own heart. That you just described Jennifer's perfect Thanksgiving, right?
Yes.
She's like, duh, yes. What a rhetorical question that is.
Don't anybody bother me. Just leave me alone.
I think that's a horse. Another, I'm going to be stereotypical here. I think that's another. If you talk to 10 horse girls, 9 of them are going to say that's their perfect Thanksgiving. Because
yeah.
I think that horse women, and I'm being stereotypical here, tend to be a little bit more of a more loners than the typical, and
they're
they do
loners.
Like to just spend time alone with
we
their
like
horses.
We like to hang out with our own kind.
That's right. Our own disturbed kind.
And generally speaking, our families are not our own kind.
That's true. That's true. I was the only one in my family who was interested in horses. It was like I was dropped from the sky from aliens. Like, they would just look at me like, what?
Yeah.
And so, don't you want to play tennis? No, I want to have horses. So, and for me, I deal with a lot of people. I like people. I'm pretty outgoing, obviously. I'm chatty. Glenn's going, please shut up, Lynn. I'm trying to get a word
no,
in edgewise.
I'm just enjoying the morning off.
But, you know, really, your lungs are finally getting the chance to recover, you know. But when I really want to recharge, I want to be with my horses and my most favorite people. And I really get a lot out of that. And I don't feel lonely when I'm with my horses. So.
Well, that sounds perfect. We're going to have a nice quiet one as well. And then Saturday we're heading out to Shaker Village here, which is an old Shaker Village. Beautiful place. I don't know if you've been here in Lexington to Shaker Village, but they also have a fox hunt out there, the Woodford Hounds, and we're going to be, is it Woodford, Jennifer? I think she's getting our guests on the line. But we're going to be going out there for the Blessing of the Hounds on Saturday. That is one of my favorite things when it comes to fox hunting, and I'm kind of bringing that up because it does lead into our next guest, who was the winner of the Virginia Field Hunter Championship, and I know you have some experience with that we're going to hear about.
Yeah.
Hunting in Virginia, because he used to live there as well. But I think the Blessing of the Hounds was the one day when we lived up at Myopia, where Jennifer was the manager of the Myopia Hunt Club up there. And she went on every hunt for a couple of years. And that was one of my favorite things as a horse husband to go to, was the Blessing of the Hounds, because it's just kind of, it's just special, and it just, there's nothing like it.
No, it's just, and it's very traditional. It has kind of a, you feel that sense of history when you go see a Blessing of the Hounds, you know, and I find it very moving. And
it is.
Just very moving. And then everyone who's there loves the animal so much. And that's another thing that's just, you just feel that sense of history that, you know, for centuries people would gather and do this in some form or another. And so I like that as well.
And it's usually around, what makes it kind of extra special is it's usually around the holidays. So it kind of leads you into the Christmas season. Now, up at Myopia, it's a huge deal up there. On Thanksgiving Day, every year they have a hunt. And there are literally thousands of people that come out and line the country back roads in northern Massachusetts, north of Boston. And it's pretty countryside anyway. They line the roads to watch the hunt on Thanksgiving Day. It's kind of become, over the last 100 years, it's become a tradition, and it's become a spectator event up there, which makes it extra special and really cool on Thanksgiving Day to go out and to watch the hounds and to watch the riders. And there usually is 100 to 120 riders that day.
Oh, it's so cinematic, isn't it? Because you see the ride, you know, they're in their colors, and there's the hounds, and the horses are so beautifully turned out and so athletic. And it's a very, I think it's kind of a romantic thing. You feel like you're in a 17th century print or something. Just
well, and it's funny you say that, because I was going to say that all those prints you see that every horse person has in their house of a fox hunt scene is what it's like at the Blessing of the Hounds. That's the same feeling.
Yeah. It's really cool. It's unusual.
Well, our best to everybody up at Myopia in northern Boston, up there in Massachusetts tomorrow. Enjoy your fox hunt. And we're going to be talking to the winner of the Virginia Field Hunter Championship. Her name is, I think it's Karen Wilson. And we're going to be talking to her in just a moment. But first, we need to hear, we need to hear about Back on Track products. And I think there's a saddle pad that Back on Track has that would be a perfect holiday gift. And Jamie got a chance to talk to Bo, the owner of Back on Track, a little while ago. So let's hear about that saddle pad that I think would make a great holiday gift.
Well, we are here with Bo from Back on Track Products, and we're going to highlight today the saddle pad. Tell us about the saddle pad.
The saddle pad is starting to get more and more popular. People, some have bought them, buying more. They really like them, and Michelle Gibson is one of them. Some is a top dressage rider, and it's good quality, and what it do, the same there, to reflect the body warmth back like a far infrared rear. It's not, they don't overheat the horse or anything. They just keep the more supple and loose. Mm-hmm. And it's a good quality and affordable. They're $79, and it's like a good quality saddle pad.
That's very affordable for a saddle pad that's going to increase the blood flow.
Yeah.
Under that's amazing. I had no idea.
Are they the type of saddle pad that they can be used both in practice and show?
Yes.
Okay. So absolutely. They're show quality. They look.
Absolutely. So they look like a normal saddle pad. You can't see the difference, but it really makes a difference. I don't ride myself, but everybody tells me. And since the increase of saddle pad have been very good, it's actually that product that increased most in our sales. So it means we get a lot of repeat customers. So that means.
Is it a square pad or is it the shape of the saddle?
It's a square pad. So, you know, we have all-purpose and dressage, and we're going to get one. Goes around
shaped
this
one.
Shaped ones as well. Well, that's great. And $79.95, and they are machine washable?
Yes.
You know, for what it does, that's a terrific price, because we have seen some saddle pads here that don't do anything but be a saddle pad for hundreds of dollars.
Yeah. And this is actually $79.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, it's pretty, and it's a good quality hold up. You know, like a regular saddle pad of good quality. Yes.
Make your horses happy. Go to backontrackproducts.com and get the saddle pad. It'll definitely improve their attitude.
Well, thank you. We thank all of our sponsors, especially Back on Track today, for being our sponsor today. But all of our sponsors here on the Horse Radio Network, they're the ones that really make this happen and allow us to do what we do. Hopefully providing a little bit of fun, a little bit of entertainment, and you learn a little bit along the way. Well, speaking of fun, we have Karen Wilson, who I guarantee you is still celebrating, because that is one thing that fox hunters are very good at, is celebrating. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you today?
Good. You're the winner of the Virginia Field Hunter Championship.
Wow.
Yes.
That's really cool.
Yes, I'm enjoying it, and so is my horse.
Well, tell us a little bit about how this championships came to be. And first I want to say that there is one state in this country that really is known for fox hunting. It's Virginia. It really, the traditions of fox hunting go way, way back to George Washington and back to the beginning of this country in Virginia. That's the place when I think of traditional fox hunting in the country, I think of Virginia. Am I right there?
Yes, we've got 26 recognized packs in the state of Virginia.
Wow.
I think that's the most packs of any state in the country. But it is beautiful hunting country and is very well known for its wonderful hound work and beautiful territory.
Well, now, which hunt do you belong to?
I belong to the Fairfax Hunt, which was started in 1936 and have been a member since 2003.
All right, and did you hunt before that? Have you always been a hunter, or is this a new thing?
Well, I was an eventer turned fox hunter. Decided that while I enjoyed the show life, it was really nice just to be able to get out with my horse and fox hunt for 3 or 4 hours and not have to drive a couple hours and compete all day. So I joined the Fairfax Hunt and have enjoyed it, and also cap around to various hunts in the territory.
Well, Karen, let's be honest, too. You were an eventer. My wife is an eventer. My co-host Jamie's an eventer. But, you know, the favorite part of every eventer is not dressage, and it's really not even stadium jumping. It's going fast jumping jumps, and that's what you get to do in fox hunting. You get to do the best part.
Exactly.
Yeah, exclusively the best part.
And drink. Let's add that, too.
We're known for our tailgates.
Yes. Flasks are mandatory.
Exactly.
Well, now tell us about the competition, how that started, and what exactly you do in the Field Hunter competition.
Okay. Well, shortly after World War II, a small group of Virginia fox hunters wanted to hold a hunter trial. And so horses had to be affiliated with a Virginia hunt. And the masters of the respective hunts would nominate two riders to compete. And this event dated back to 1950, and it evolved from a competition from the Farmington Hunt Club, which is down in the Charlottesville area and is a very well-known hunt. And so every year since 1950, this event has been hosted by the winner of the event the previous year. So It's the hunt club's responsibility to select a meet site, sponsor the prizes, the ribbons, put on the tailgate, and organize the event. And the event is comprised of three phases that are judged by, this time there were seven judges, and there were 22 riders, 11 hunts recognized, represented.
Wow.
And we started out with a hat class, walk, trot, canter, hand gallop, both ways. And this is in an open field, not in a ring. And then we are led by the winner of the previous year, who was Marilyn Jarvis of the Piedmont Hunt. And we went on a 30-minute mock hunt over Piedmont territory, which is about 20 fences, including stone fences, coops, post and rail, and timber fences. And there are mounted judges and judges that are at certain jumps that judge the individual based on, you know, how much they would like to hunt that horse. That's what it's all about. You have to have a good partner in the rider, but it's really all about the horse. So they judge that phase of the competition. And then 8 to 10 riders and horses are selected out of the amount that competed. And I was one of the 10. And we had to do an individual test, which included trotting up to a split rail, dropping a fence, going over a big stack of logs, over a coop. Then we had to jump a skinny round bale.
Oh, geez.
We don't have that opportunity to do that in the hunt field.
I was just
going to
say, that doesn't happen, yeah.
And the first two riders before me, their horses refused the jump, and I just told my horse, we're not looking at it, you're going, and he flew over it, and we headed to the timber fence and then finished with two big stone walls, you know, almost 4 feet. And then we gallop into the gallery halt, and then we open a gate. And then the judges score each phase separately and then decide on the winner. And
Now, were you surprised that you were the winner, or were you? Did you know you had done pretty well? You were kind of expecting it.
You had to be excited after the round bale.
Yes, I was shocked. This is the first time that I've competed in this competition. I've participated in the North American Field Hunter Championship and have qualified for that. But the field of riders was just so impressive. We had an Olympic rider in there. We had several masters. We had the winner of the North American Field Hunter Championship. And a lot of these are my friends that I hunt with. And I was just really out there to have a good time. And I was so pleased with the performance of my horse. And just to have been selected was quite an honor. And when they called my friend, third place was Nina Fout, who was the former Olympic champion in three-day eventing. And then Michael Hoffman, former master, and he hunts with the Piedmont and Snickersville pack. And I really thought another friend of mine, I said, well, my other friend won. And so I really didn't expect it. And when they called my name, I was just very surprised, but very pleased.
And Karen, can you tell us a little bit about Chase, your horse? Because it does sound like you guys are such a great team. And you know, like you said, the first part of this competition, after you get out of the hack, they're basically looking at the suitability of the horse and for the hunt. And I'm just really curious about that, because it seems like all the fox hunters I've known, the horses are such great personalities, such great athletes.
Yeah. They are, and it's truly a partnership out there, because as you know, fox hunting is pretty dangerous. And a lot of riders, you know, you need to have that relationship. In my book, you need to have a horse that's got self-preservation and that really looks out for you.
Mm-hmm.
But Chase is really my partner. He is just, I've had him a year and a half.
Wow, that's not long.
No, but I have never bonded with another horse like I've bonded with him.
Huh.
He was imported from Ireland by a gentleman by the name of Jeff Kohlhaas, who unfortunately passed away pancreatic cancer, and I was a friend of Jeff's, and that's the only reason why he became available. And I know Jeff is smiling down from heaven and is so happy of Chase's performance, but he's a 17 hand, really drop dead gorgeous, if I can say so.
If you do say so yourself.
With a white blaze, and he's the kindest horse who tries so hard, and I know that he was having a great time. And that's important. And we had hunted, 4 hours, 3 days before with the Piedmont Foxhounds. And I know he was a little tired, but he said, I'm up for the challenge, and he was.
He sounds like he just has a tremendous amount of heart, you know, just.
He does.
That's fantastic.
He really does, and, you know, he'd never gone over a lot of these fences, and I will say that when we were approaching the, it's a regulation timber fence, and in front of the timber fence, there is a railroad tie. And so we were galloping to that fence. I said, okay, this will be a first. And I kind of put my eye on the fence. I shouldn't have. And we didn't take it as nice as I would have liked to, but we can celebrate that we did gallop over a timber fence, and that was special.
That's impressive. And I'm so blown away that you've been just a team for a year and a half. I mean, that really is a tribute to – not just the bond that you both have, but to both of you as individuals, you know, how you must have worked very hard for this, really. And that's fantastic. Congratulations to you both.
Well, thank you. Flat work is a big part of our regimen, and I try not to hunt him more than once a week. I've got a couple other field hunters that I hunt, but I try not to hunt him more than once and do groundwork, basic flat work, and jumping in the ring. And also take him out on hacks just to keep him, you know, focused
fresh.
You know, his manners and balance and carrying himself properly. And that every time I ride him, we're not going to run around for, 3 or 4 hours and jump fences and go screaming down hills.
Now, that's really smart and disciplined. Yeah.
Now, I have a question here, too. Kind of a sillier question. But do they also judge the quality of the bourbon in your flask? Is that,
They should.
I'll tell you, one of the events that I entered recently, it was the Morven Park Hunter Pace, and it was a really fun event. And one of the classes was Best Flask, and I did win Best Flask.
You're a true competitor, like you're multi-level.
Hey, we got out there and we did the holler. We cracked the whip, and they judge. We won the best tailgate, and so Fairfax Hunt is. We have a lot of great participants who like to get out and compete and have a good time. And while we didn't win the competition, we did win optimum time. But it's just a great thing, and a flask is very important. And this time, I just went into the liquor cabinet and selected a couple of things and kind of just threw, Grand
How do you
Lange.
Get the job of the person who gets to taste them all?
Judges.
Yeah.
Who gets to do that job? That's a really good job.
I think a celebrity radio host would be a good judge.
I think that would be perfect. I think you're excellent.
You're welcome.
Hey, Karen. Give a shout out to the master of your hunt.
The masters, there are three masters. One is my husband, Paul Wilson.
Really?
He just became a joint master this year. And Michael Harper is a joint master, and Linda Devon is a joint master. And our senior master is Randy Rouse, who's been master for 60 years. Randy is 93 years old.
Good for
him. Periodically rides, plays a mean saxophone, and is just a great all-around fox hunter.
Now, do you guys do your blessing of the hounds around this time of year, too? We were talking about that earlier in the show.
Yes, we are doing that tomorrow. And Dr. Betsy Parker, who is very, very active in the hunter-jumper world, is an ordained minister, and she lives at Huntlands in Middleburg, and one of the most beautiful estates in the area, and she will do our blessing.
Do you do a hunt on that day as well, then, too, on Thanksgiving?
Oh, yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. And it's a big. I was talking about Jennifer used to work up at Lyopia, and we, you know, Thanksgiving Day was a huge spectator day. People would come, thousands of people would line the back country roads to watch the hunt that day. Is it that way in Virginia too?
It is, because yes, Thanksgiving is such a family-oriented holiday, and a lot of our friends and family that visit have never seen a hunt or participated, and you know, you can only sit around the house so long and wait for the turkey to cook. And so with the blessing of the hounds, it's a beautiful event, and everybody gets dressed in their top hat and tails, and riders do, and then we switch out for our regulation helmets. But it's beautiful. All the men have got their red coats on, and the horses are braided, and it's just, it's always held at one of the nicest fixtures with the beautiful views of the territory. And, you know, we'll hunt for about not that long, because our masters are mindful that the turkey does need to get done.
Right.
And, so it is a beautiful event, and a lot of people do car top along the dirt roads to see the hunt in action.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have goosebumps. I don't know about you, Lynn, but I have goosebumps right now.
Well, come on down anytime.
Oh, we will. It sounds like fun.
Well, Karen, this has been so much fun having you on. Congratulations again. And are you going back next year for round two? Are you going to be a repeat
champion?
Well,
next year I have to lead it.
Right. You'll be the boss next year.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, it's a challenge for the horse not only to be able to be in the field, but also to lead the field. So I think he'll do fine on that, and then we'll host it, and we'll be cheering on all the rest of the participants.
I see a road trip for the Horses in the Morning show next year,
yes.
Jennifer.
Oh, you must.
I want a guest host again.
You must. And,
just throwing that out there.
We'll have a blast contest, and you can judge it.
Okay. Yeah, I think that'd be perfect. Jamie and I would be good at that, and Lynn, too. We'll have to bring Lynn along to Texas to do that one.
Definitely.
We'll need extra help because, you know, somebody has to finish the show.
Yeah.
So.
Someone has to be semi-sober, yeah.
Thank you, Karen, and
happy
Thanksgiving to you and everybody at the Fairfax Hunt up there, and have a great day riding tomorrow.
Thank you. Thanks. Best of Thanksgiving to you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye, Karen. Well, she was delightful.
She was, and it just, you know, it makes it sound like so much fun. I think a lot of times fox hunting kind of gets that elite sort of reputation, and then you talk with someone like Karen, who's a top competitor, and it just sounds like the fun, sporty, kind of riding activity that it really is. You know, people who fox hunt, they like to go outside, ride cross country with their horses, have a good time, and be somewhat cinematic while they do it. And it just made me want to immediately go out there and ride with them.
Well, and you know, I think too, and Jennifer can type in on this, I think that a lot of the hunts, even maybe not so approachable hunts of the past, have had to open it up, make it more fun, make it less stuffy, because they need the members.
That's right.
You know, one of the things about fox hunts is the average age tends to be a little older, so they needed to start attracting the youngers because they were dying off.
Right.
And the number of people hunting was decreasing. I know, Jennifer, it was even that way at Myopia when we were there many years ago.
It is a struggle for many of the hunt clubs to recruit younger members, and most of the hunts that I've been in contact with and worked with over the years, they're really making a genuine effort to encourage younger riders. For example, Woodford, during the preseason, when they're out exercising the hounds, like when it's a much slower pace. It's kind of like a fast trail ride at that time of year with fox hunts along. Children are free. You can bring your kids along so they get exposed to it. And the vast majority of hunt clubs these days have multiple levels, so to speak. It used to be the hounds were in the front, followed by the gentleman in the red coat, followed by everybody else, and it was a full-tilt, crazy ride. But nowadays, they divide it up so that folks who don't want to run full-tilt and jump over giant jumps but still want to follow the hounds and enjoy the rest of it, they sort of divide up the group a little bit,
mm-hmm.
so that even if you're not an overly aggressive or gutsy rider, if you can go on a fast trail ride with your friends safely, mm-hmm. you can fox hunt these days. And it's
That's
really
great.
Not if you want to go out and you say, well, maybe I don't like to ride very much in the winter. If you cap, in other words, you just pay one hunt at a time instead of becoming a member,
mm-hmm.
it's really a whole lot less expensive than your average horse show. So it's really a fun and interesting sport to look into if you don't know a whole lot about it. And these folks
and
really are very welcome.
And you get to run fast and jump high.
Yeah. And
yeah,
I mean,
if you like to go in the front, you can.
Exactly. Well, here in Texas, there's fox hunts, you know, across barren deserts now because we have no grass. But they get a lot of eventers, just like what Karen was saying. She used to be an eventer. And eventers will come and tune up their eventing horses and fox hunt a little bit with them. And then I think over time they get converted because it is sort of focusing on the primary activity that most eventers like the best. And so you see a lot of crossover here for that. Yeah, that's dressage. Yeah, extreme dressage. That's the best part. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break for our song today. We're going to get to that right after we talk about Feed XL. And I picked a song out just for you today, Lynn.
Yay!
It's from our friend Dan Roberts, oldbootsmusic.com, and it is Only in Texas.
All right.
Now, before you get too excited, you have to hear the lyrics.
Okay.
So, first, let's talk about Feed XL, then we're going to play our song, and we're going to be back with the Horse Health Report, and we're going to hear a little bit about some of the serious stuff that happened at the AAP convention. And then we're going to hear about the parties, too, because Dr. Jones is going to be here. So he's going to be filling us in on the parties as well.
Poor Gypsy is suffering from horse envy. He's the new kid in the pasture and can't get over the stamina and shape of his fellow stallmates. Rumors around the barn point to Feed XL. Seems their owner has been online and discovered the Feed XL nutrition tool. That means Gypsy's in for a big transformation. The other horses have been telling Gypsy all about the changes made to their diet and how Feed XL has improved their overall well-being. When it comes to your horse's diet, conflicting advice can result in overfeeding and money wasted. With a Feed XL nutrition tool, enter your horse's weight, diet, and activity level to get started. It'll allow you to see where your horse's diet stands and give you the opportunity to revise it until it's balanced. Feed XL has the latest science backing them up, allowing you to take charge of your horse's diet with an easy-to-use nutrition tool, taking the guesswork out of what to feed your horse. It's almost like Gypsy has his own personal nutritionist right at the barn. Visit FeedXL.com for a simple and easy nutrition tool to balance your horse's diet for optimum health.
Wearing calf roping, cattle ranching, gate open, buckle wearing, barbecuing, beer drinking, pig roping, hay baling, friendly driving, fiddle playing, son of a gun. Double hocking, steer tripping, washer pitching, cow tipping, snake shooting, jukeboxing, honky tonking, haggard looking, church going, W voting proud. Where they're from? In Texas, only in Texas. There's pride in the eyes of the ones who wear that brand. Cause it's a whole nother country between the Red and the Rio Grande. Yeah, we got it all, only in Texas. Bustin' bull riding, trail dustin', barrel racing, bulldogging, hat stetching, boots justin', rodeo and wrangler wearing, spur jingling, real cowhand. Beef eating, cattle grazing, two stepping, steer hazing, chip kicking, chili cooking, Lone Star appreciation, pistol packing, deer tracking, Alamo remembering land. Yeah, Texas, only in Texas. There's pride in the eyes of the ones who wear that brand. Cause it's a whole nother country between the Red and the Rio Grande. And we've got it all, only in Texas. Hey, we got it all, y'all, only in Texas.
Well, this is Glenn the Geek, and I am here with Lynn Reardon today, filling in for Jamie Jennings here on Horses in the Morning, brought to you by Back on Track Products. Some excellent Christmas gifts for you this year over at Back on Track Products. Practical ones, I might say, as well. Well, the schedule for the rest of the week is we will be playing you a special new recorded episode tomorrow, a musical episode with Tiffany DeRose. She is absolutely wonderful. You're going to love her music. We got to spend an hour with her. We got to play some great songs. She also has some holiday songs in there as well. So Tiffany is going to kick off our holiday season here at Horses in the Morning tomorrow on the show. You can listen to that live at 9 a.m. at the usual spot, or you can listen to the recorded over at the website at horsesinthemorning.com. And then Friday, we have a special shopping episode for you as well. Because you started on Black Friday, we had to bring you some products that we thought were going to be great for shopping this year. So you can check all of that out at horsesinthemorning.com. And then we'll be back, Jamie and I, live on Monday for one day. And then we're going to have another recorded episode because we're heading out to Norco, California, to do our 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of next week, live from Norco. And Wednesday is the day. I want to remind everybody, if you live anywhere near Norco, which is west of L.A., just right outside of Disneyland, actually, if you live anywhere near there, you can join us from 6 a.m. to 7:30 a.m. at the America's Country Store there in Norco, and we'll be broadcasting live from there, and we encourage an audience that day. And I know there are a lot of Norconians that are going to be heading out, so we're looking forward to that, Lynn. This is the first time a town has invited us to come out and visit.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, so they have all kinds of activities planned for us all week, and we're going to be the grand marshals of their parade, and just a whole lot of fun. We're really looking forward to it.
Great.
Yeah, one of the things that we're going to be doing is we're going to be actually going to see the barns at Disneyland. We're going to get a tour of the barn, so we're anxious to see if there are little fairies flying around feeding the horses, or if they're actually humans that have to do it.
If anything is animated, right?
That's right. We want to see if the little elves or little the dwarves. We want to see if the dwarves are out feeding and taking care of the horses. I kind of think it's going to be like a regular barn, and I'm going to be disappointed. There isn't going to be like any magic at all.
Well, I don't know. I think they might cook something up just for you. Something special.
You think Mickey's out there with a shovel?
Yeah. Mickey and Minnie, Pluto.
Jennifer, we have a couple of minutes till our guests are on the line.
Yes, we do. Dr. Jones is madly dashing back to the clinic, having, I think, gone out on a call early this morning. It'll be about 5 after when Dr. Jones gets here, and Christy is battling with a lack of technology at the parents' house.
Oh, dear.
Okay. He's home for the holidays, huh?
Sounds epic,
home
right?
Home for the holidays and out of touch. I'm going to go
check
Lynn, on.
Well, Lynn, now, that's all right. We, Lynn and I, we can occupy time. That's not
I
a problem
so.
At all.
I don't think that's a problem at all.
So, Lynn, now you said when you lived in Virginia, you actually did some fox hunting.
I did. I hilltopped, which was what Jennifer was talking about, where if you're not the most seasoned jumper or if you're on a green horse, let's say, where you can follow a slightly different route that goes around the jumps but yet still follows the rest of the hunt pack. And I thought that was just a fantastic experience. I was riding a polo pony turned fox hunter, and that little mare took great care of me. And, I mean, I just had the best time ever. Even when one of the more experienced riders in the hunt was riding a very green, very beautiful, but very flaky little mare, and we were going down sort of a steep incline in the woods, and his little mare thought it'd be really fun to jump, and unfortunately she jumped on my horse. So I ended up sort of sliding off and hanging onto my borrowed mount's neck, and she very carefully walked me down in spite of all of the hysteria of the green mare jumping on her, and just kind of gently deposited me at the end of the incline, and I got back on, and it was just a real tribute. You know, the seasoned fox hunting horses, nothing bothers them. I mean, they're just very calm, and it was so much fun. We all laughed. We thought that was the highlight of the whole day. And then there was much drinking.
There's always the stories when you come back, when you finally get back, of who fell off.
I know. It was great. I really liked the people. I thought that everybody was just very, they were very outgoing and friendly. and athletic, and it was kind of like being on a, I don't know, being in the jock room with the jocks, only on horseback. And I just had a great time and appreciated it and just really came to appreciate the horses, too.
Yeah, because they're very tolerant.
Super tolerant.
Of what we put them through.
Yeah, super tolerant. You know, you want me to jump that coop, no problem. So they, and it's very, there's something I always like about riding outside. You know, I never was a show rider, so I really like to be outside with the horses. And I found it to be just a blast, you know, to be moving quickly across the country, even if I wasn't taking the super big jumps yet, jumping smaller ones. And it felt strangely natural, you know, to be running along with this herd of horses with people with flasks and hollering at each other. And then, you know, a lot of it fantastic horsemanship on the hunt field, too. And really admiring that everywhere I looked, you know, there was an excellent rider on a well-trained horse. And it just, for me, it just felt like a very stirring way to spend the day on horseback.
Well, and I'm assuming some of your thoroughbreds you've adopted out through Lope have gone to be fox hunters.
They have, and thoroughbreds actually do really well at that, and it's a really nice way to channel their kind of heart and competitive spirit in an activity that is very purposeful. And a lot of them have that, just that heart. You know, they're happy to take that jump for you, and they're happy to kind of keep going along. And they cover ground well. The thoroughbreds have a nice stride for it. And so many, many horses go from the track into fox hunting. It's a great job for them.
Yeah, it is, definitely. No question about it. As a matter of fact, sometimes they're more agile than the big warm bloods are, and you kind of need that in the field as well.
I think you do, too. You know, I mean, I warm bloods are beautiful, but, you know, a lot of them are crossed with thoroughbreds now anyway so that you can get that agility. And one of the things when you're out going across real country, as I'm sure Jennifer can attest to, is you want a horse that's going to be sort of checking the ground out for you and adapting and kind of giving you those signals. And a thoroughbred's very cat-like on its feet sometimes, and we'll really be paying attention to that and kind of helping you out, being a partner, like Karen was saying. She and Chase are a partnership. And sometimes the warm bloods, I think they're beautiful horses, but sometimes they're a little too tolerant. They might be like,
right,
oh,
right.
Hey, I can go through that tree, no problem. But like, well, no, if you could avoid it, it would actually be a little better.
That's so, right.
Yeah,
that
ideally.
That is true. We had did something on the Stable Scoop show this week. It was just Jennifer and Helene and I, and we sat around and we just reminisced about what we all did at Thanksgivings, and that's, you know, one of all of our favorite memories was when Helena and Jennifer used to ride together up at Myopia and the Thanksgiving hunts. That was always one of the favorite ones for sure.
That's one of the, I think, oldest hunts, isn't it, in the United States?
Yeah,
Myopia.
It is,
has
actually
to be. Yeah, yep. It's really yep. Traditional. We consider.
And Myopia actually got its name. People ask that. It's a very exclusive country club.
Mm-hmm.
Very exclusive country club, and it's a hunt club, and they also have a golf course. Matter of fact, one of the first U.S. Opens was played on the golf course at Myopia back in early 1900s. And presidents still fly up there to play golf, and it's an interesting place because there are only a certain number of members allowed at Myopia. It's a very exclusive. You're talking, you know, billionaires for this club.
Wow.
And the hunt has always gone on, and anybody up there can join the hunt. So they can become part of the hunt. And it's been going on since the 1800s. And the reason they got the name Myopia, there were five guys who, it was actually a baseball thing and not a hunt thing at all.
Huh.
They played baseball, and they couldn't see very well. So thus the name myopia, because myopia is an eye condition.
Right,
where you
your
can't see very well.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, apparently they couldn't play baseball worth crap. So they had this baseball team, and they named it Myopia. That's how the name Myopia came to be.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting story.
And there's a polo club. Isn't that true also associated?
Yeah,
they
play polo there.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go out and we used to park our car along the polo field every Saturday or Sunday.
Right.
And watch them play polo there. In Massachusetts, people are going to write me letters now. Massachusetts was not my favorite place to live. I'm kind of more, you know, I grew up in Pennsylvania, but I feel like I'm Southern. You know, I kind of like that slow Southern, very sweet thing that goes on down here in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get that so much up in New England. So I did enjoy certain aspects of living up there the time we did.
Yeah. The traditions up there are so fantastic. And then, you know, when you're talking about horse traditions in New England, you just can't beat that for pageantry and just outright beauty of the landscape. And we briefly considered moving to Boston when we were leaving the D.C. area and ultimately settled on Texas, but which shows you where our, you know, how strange we were. But one of the reasons we ruled that area out was that it was even more expensive than the D.C. area for horses. So it was something that I felt like I couldn't do more than I had been doing in the D.C. area with horses, and that was my goal, whereas in Texas it was a little more affordable and a little more variety. But if I had been a billionaire, I probably would have, that would have been my first choice, would have been to be in the Boston area, just so you can look as good as possible against all of them.
I think you chose wisely, because I'll tell you why, because you live in Texas now, and how long have you lived there?
I've lived here since 2003.
Has the community accepted you yet?
Yes, although I'm still a little bit of a Yankee, you know, because I still talk really fast for Texas, and but my heart's in the right place.
If you move to New England, it takes you 40 years to get accepted. You're going to get accepted much quicker in Texas than in New England, for sure.
You know, you're probably right about that. That's a good point. And, you know, one thing about Texas is that it's genuinely full of eccentric people. And so you can – I was the oddball in the D.C. area, and here I'm like, you know, very normal. So I seem like typical.
Well, Lynn, I'll tell you what. I want you to meet another Texan who's coming on here very shortly. But first, I have to play the music because she's very disappointed if I don't.
Okay.
It's time for the weekly health report from thehorse.com. Fantastic information and Chrissy's attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
And it is that time. It's time for thehorse.com weekly health report. And we have Chrissy on with us. Good morning, Chrissy.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
All right. Do you know Lynn from Lope over there in Texas?
I do not, actually. I have not gotten a chance to meet you, and I've been listening to you on and off as I've been trying to get connected this morning.
Technology challenge this morning.
If we lose you can call back. It's okay.
Well, you know, I have a landline. It's just got this buzz on it, and I'm sorry for that.
Now, have you always lived in Texas?
Are you talking to me or Lynn? No, actually, I grew up in Southeast Georgia.
Okay.
And it's a fairly small town called St. Simon's Island.
So
I just moved to Texas in December. So then I just over a year.
Ah, okay. Are you liking Texas? By the way, it's another 20 years before you're accepted there.
I know, right? Well, you know, it depends on the crowd you're running with.
Yeah.
I like Texas quite a bit. I've been visiting friends in Texas since, sometime in 06, and I've really, really enjoyed it every time I've visited. It's just kind of had that feeling when the first time I visited, like, man, I should have grown up here. This place is cool. So
I feel the same way.
I've always had a blast.
I have that question. In Texas, is it traditional on Thanksgiving to have steak instead of turkey?
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm in Georgia right now, and it would be my first Thanksgiving there.
Yeah.
I think I would have to answer that question. I will say that on the coast of Georgia, you know, we got kind of tired of turkey a long time ago. We usually do seafood. Maybe
that's
just my family.
Smart.
Well, let's get Dr. Jones on here because, you know, you have this nice outline. Good morning, Dr. Jones, by the way.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Jones.
Are you still hungover? Just ask.
I've got a bit of laryngitis going on, so I hope everything goes well.
Yeah, right. So now, Chrissy is probably the best at doing this. She provides us, Lynn, with an outline every week of everything we're going to talk about, and we usually stick to that pretty well, but today, screw all that. I want to hear what really happened at the AE. Lynn was there too, guys.
She was
also there.
I was there.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was my first time at the convention, and McLeod Pharmaceuticals gave us a spot at their booth, and they had a book signing with Kate Tweedy, the author secretary at Smedow, and they donated a share of the proceeds to Lope, the nonprofit that I run for racehorses here. And I was amazed. I'd never seen so many equine vets in one place, and it was very entertaining. You know, once the convention was over, you could just hear the bars groaning as all the vets scurried out of the education sessions right into the nearest bar. It was funny.
They have a good time.
Yeah,
did you see the kangaroo?
I did. That was when I walked in. someone at the booth said, "Have you seen the kangaroo?" And I'm like, "No." And they took me over. And, you know, the thing that just, it was so sensible, but it just took me a moment to adjust to, was that he was wearing the diaper.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Yeah, that's very practical, but it looks strange." That kangaroo was a pro. She worked the crowd really well. And, you know, top attraction. And we also saw the ponies. There were several very tolerant ponies there as well. Getting
Dr.
eye exam.
Jones. All right. Spill it, Dr. Jones. You know, it wasn't Las Vegas, so now we have to tell.
That's all you're going to get out of me is a laugh.
A very horse laugh, right?
Very horse laugh, pardon the pun, yeah. Well, I will.
She actually made it to the convention, which is good because it was a little bit debatable if she was going to get there on time.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, that was quite entertaining. And to top it off, Christy, I just got my luggage. It just got delivered 10 minutes ago.
Oh, well, better late than never.
Yeah, I didn't arrive. Me and
adventures and traveling written all over it.
Oh gosh, yeah. Me and six other veterinarians are standing in the Orlando airport at 8 o'clock last night, going, "Where's our luggage?" Everybody else is leaving, and it was the entire band that went from San Antonio to Nashville did not seem to make that connection with their luggage from Nashville to Orlando. So yeah, I just got it this morning. So. Anyway.
I went to a convention in Palm Beach at one point that my luggage, it was only like a three-day convention, and my luggage got there, I think, the evening of the day before I was leaving.
Oh.
So I was wearing, you know, the same clothes. It was awesome. Yeah. Trying to look professional. You know, I now usually dress down to travel.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll let Glenn in on one entertaining part.
Did you attend one session?
I attended them all. I always do. My girlfriends give me trouble about it because I'm a little gunner. I make every lecture, even though I've only gotten 2 or 3 hours of sleep. And they're sleeping their little minds away in the morning, and they get there at noon, and I'm like, "Where have you been?" And, yeah. So I come back home to recuperate, and I think most veterinarians do. So.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, take it away. You can talk about serious stuff if you want.
Well, it takes a toll on you. Sitting in the lecture room is not what we're used to doing. We're used to getting up and moving around.
Uh-huh.
The good thing is that they did have enough sense to keep the lecture halls freezing.
Oh,
I know. Harder for you to sleep.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
They were ice boxes. Everybody had to go outside to warm up.
Absolutely.
So we did have a couple of semi-serious things we wanted to mention, just cool take-home messages and whatnot. First of all, and one thing, I do want to give a shout-out to our magazine behavior columnist, Sue McDonald. She's actually not a veterinarian, but she's a Ph.D. and a certified applied animal behaviorist at the University of Pennsylvania. And she got an award at the AAP, which is called the George Stubbs Award. You can take a look at it on our website. Actually, we did a short interview with her as well. She was given this award. The AAP gives this award out to a non-veterinarian who has made significant contributions to veterinary medicine. And what they said in that press release is that she has provided monumental insight into the understanding of equine behavior, physiology, and welfare. She keeps a semi-feral herd of ponies there at UPenn, and she's really, really published a lot of interesting things regarding horse behavior, and she works a lot with reproductive behavior as well. She's worked with a lot of real high-profile stallions that were having trouble in the breeding shed. So I just wanted to let everybody know she got that award because we're really proud of her for that. It was
That's
really
great.
Awesome. And, of course, we've also had a number of other things going on. One product that was launched shortly before the AAP convention I think is going to really make a big difference to a lot of horse owners is called Percent, but it's an FDA-approved pergolide product, which, of course, is used to treat Cushing's disease. And pergolide's been around for quite some time, but not in an FDA-approved formulation. There has never been an FDA-approved formulation for horses. It was always compounded from a human product. And now it's available in a stable, FDA-approved form for horses. And the reason that that's cool is that the compounded formulations, they could be liquid, they could be tablets, they could be all kinds of forms, but they've never really lasted that long on the shelf. There have been a lot of studies looking at various formulations and from different pharmacies, and they often either don't contain as much as they're supposed to or it just degrades really quickly. And if that bottle's been sitting on your shelf for a month or two and you give it to the horse, it may not necessarily hurt the horse, but just doesn't have as much of the medication as you wanted him to have. So having a stable product with a long shelf life, I think it's 2 years, is huge. So that's
and let's,
one thing.
And let's recoup on or back up that the Cushing's affects the geriatric horses, and most of the people who have geriatric horses are not having the horses around because they love to help keep them alive and feed them. It's because they're part of their family.
Right.
And there's a lot of older horses that are part of herds, or they're the only horse in the backyard anymore because they've had them since they were a little girl, a little boy, and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's really important that they really take a good look at how they're taking care of this older horse or this older pony and switch from the compounding pharmacies to this drug, because it's for the betterment of the horse. And, of course, as usual, it's going to be a little bit more expensive to buy an FDA-approved drug because of all the hoops and loops you got to jump through to become an FDA-approved drug. I've been through clinical trials here at my clinic, and it's a lot of work for the companies to get a drug approved for what they want it approved for. So the expense is going to be a little bit higher, but you're going to get a better bang for your buck because the product's going to be more stable and it's actually going to work.
Absolutely. And I don't usually plug a product, and I'm not trying to just plug a product, but the fact that it's FDA approved and they went through everything to get it there, and they're also putting together a lot of educational efforts around the product. They've actually brought in some of the best brains in veterinary internal medicine to refine the diagnostic protocols for the disease so it can be caught a little bit earlier, and you can treat the horse better and forestall some of the more serious clinical signs. So it's not just about this drug in this case. So I think that's a good point too. All right, so we have a number of things we wanted to cover. Not a lot of time. Erin attended some of the new interactive lameness sessions. These were sort of like case-based discussions where there was a lot of audience interaction. This was the first year the AAP's done that, and I think those went really well, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, and I think what was interesting is the audience was eager to participate to see if they would rank against the experts that were on the stage. And that was pretty phenomenal to see that. There was a lot of correlation. You know, everybody has a different way of working things up, and some ways are not the absolute correct way. Everybody needs to think outside of the box a little bit. And but majority of the ways that we work up lamenesses and get to the final result, there tends to be somewhat of a direct line. There's a few features you can come different ways about, you know, addressing them and getting to that same result. But all in all, we all went down the same line, which was really interesting. And a good portion, it kind of actually pulled the audience too, because it started off saying, are you male, female? Primarily equine, mixed animal. They had a bunch of questions we had to answer, so it kind of gave them basically a temperature on what the audience was, their background, because we knew the background of the experts, but what, you know, people actually doing those handheld responders, I'm not sure what they're called, you might know, Christy, but it kind of gave a temperature on what, who they were, and a lot of them 20 years plus and out. So you think, yeah, you're a veterinarian, she's been out 20 years, like myself, and they're going to these meetings, and all they're doing is going out drinking and eating, and they're not going to the actual lectures. Well, this proved that majority of the people in that lecture hall were actually out 20 years and answering questions. So, but they were very interesting. They probably need to clean it up a little bit. It was the first time trying it, and it was a little slow, I'll have to say, for somebody who does a lot of lameness work. It was a little slow for my liking, but I still found it very interesting to see what the responses were. They actually did talk to some of the people in the audience with a, you know, revolving microphone and said, you know, how did you answer and why did you answer that way, or do you agree with Dr. So-and-so or Dr. So-and-so on the stage? And it was interesting to hear from some of the people in the audience as well. One of them, Glenn, you would have really enjoyed this because you're looking for some humor. They had a gentleman who's a very good friend of mine, and I've actually suggested he comes on the radio show occasionally here and there. He's in, it'd be kind of like East Coast, West Coast kind of thing. I'd be on the East Coast, he's on the West Coast. And he wore a very bright, hot pink shirt, very, very typical of him. He likes to wear loud items. And his, I guess, sidebar commercial type breaks to help break up the lameness thing were quite humorous. One of them was a phone call he pretended to get from his client who had the psychic out to see their horse and said that the horse told the psychic that he felt he did not receive his own stem cells. So, you know, he said that he would be out there to explain, you know, through the psychic, and when he got back home on Wednesday that, you know, yes, you did receive your own stem cells and we can pull some if you'd like. You know, then he took a break on the second half, pulled out some Christmas hats, put it on the very serious Dr. Dave Frisbee from Colorado, surgeon there, and this hat, you push a button, and it had batteries, of course, and it lit up, and the top of the Christmas Santa hat wiggled back and forth. So it was quite humorous. He had some humorous gifts and some humor interjected into the interactive lameness sessions. And
so what you're saying is veterinarians can be humorous.
Yes. We do have a sense of humor, yes. We do have a sense of humor. So, but yes, that was that lightened up the seriousness of the day, I suppose.
There's always a lot of fun up there. And there were also a number of business take-homes for veterinarians that Aaron wanted to touch on a little bit from the opening session. Is that
recall? Yeah, they had a gentleman there from, he used to work with Disney. Of course, Disney always seems to be the companies a lot of people go to because they seem to have gotten it right in making customer service number one. And that's what, you know, yeah, customer service is number one for veterinarians, you know, but you do have to be, you know, good at what you do. And they basically stated that being available and being accurate with your work is expected by veterinarians. Just as if you went to your own medical doctor, you'd want them to make an accurate diagnosis and be available. You should be able to go into their office within a week when you're sick and get an appointment, not 3 months out when you're sick. So, you know, those two things are definitely what they expect you to have. But if you go above and beyond that and you offer advice to them and make them feel like they're a part of, you know, the circle of taking care of the horse, you know, the veterinarian, the farrier, the trainer, the owner, because the owner's there every day getting their eyes on those horses, then you really have taken an extra step as a veterinarian to win over the client. And so basically the gentleman had three items that we should look at, and that's seeing the practice through the client's eyes. You know, are you fulfilling what the client wants? Are you giving them the information they need? And then the other thing is everything speaks. You know, how clean do you present yourself? How clean is your truck? Are your staff speaking kindly to each other? Are they degrading each other in front of the clients? You know, I mean, it's just all that communication and appearance in front of the client. And then, of course, the last thing was create moments of wow, and that was where the, you know, partnership and advising came into play. The gentleman said he had gone to a meeting in Chicago, arrived, had a suit and everything, but he traveled in jeans and a polo shirt, and he said, I was wearing tennis shoes, I forgot to pack my shoes. And he said, I hate shopping, but I had to go get shoes. So he walks in the store, it's packed, and he said, normally I would have just left because I just don't have time for this. And he said, I had to stay because I had to get a pair of shoes. And this woman across the room, saleswoman, looked up, gave him a look like, I see you, don't go away, I'll be right with you. Didn't say anything to him, but just gave him a look like, hi, I see you and note you, I'll be right with you. And so he started looking at shoes. She comes up to him and says, okay, what shoes can we get you in before you leave? He said, I like this pair. And she goes, well, let me measure your feet. I mean, how many times do you get your feet measured when you buy shoes? Hardly ever.
Not anymore. You used to all the time.
Right. And
anymore.
He goes, well, okay, you don't need to measure them. I know this is my size. You know, I need size 10. Just let me measure them. So she measured the feet. And she goes, just like I expected, blah, 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 blah. So she said, I don't think those shoes would be the best for you. I think this pair of shoes would be the best for you. And he said, I don't know if it was the, you know, art of salesmanship on her part, but when I put those shoes on, I felt like I've been wearing them for months. They fit like a glove. They were perfect.
Wow.
And he said, I bought that pair. I took it up to the desk. So now she's going from availability and accuracy to making him a part of understanding why she chose those shoes over a different one. To the advice at the very end was when she was checking him out, she said, I certainly hope that you're back here to buy shoes, but in case you're not, tell the next shoe salesman that your arches are falling and you need some arch support in your shoes. He said, I didn't ask for that advice. She freely gave it, and that just sold me on, if I ever am back to Chicago, I'm going to go back to that store.
You talk about the second one, you talked about truck cleanliness and things like that. That is something when you see a vet show up that, I don't know if it's just me because I'm kind of anal about stuff, but when I see a vet show up and the truck is a disaster, I expect their care to be disaster.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also feel like the thing with the free advice there at the end, that's kind of, there's a concept in business called open hand where you can't receive something from someone until you open your hand, until you give something first. And a lot of times in I think the veterinary community, you know, they're so focused on treating the patient, which is the horse, and they forget sometimes that, you know, sometimes just the simplest interaction with the client is something that the client really values, you know, because a lot of times we don't know. We don't have the whole context. And just, you know, bits of advice or sharing of information above and beyond is something that will really create a lot of trust. And it's a kind of an open hand. You're not being paid extra to give a little bit of extra like that, but it means so much to the customer that it'll build a lot of loyalty in return business. And I think that's a great story.
Absolutely.
And I think anybody who can, when anybody can educate their client, mm-hmm. it's huge, whether it's a vet, it's a farrier, it's anybody who's working on your horse. And I know this is really going to surprise you all, but I was one of those people who really liked to grill the vet and the farrier.
Really?
No.
Shocker.
Total shocker.
Erin, you love people like me. I know you do. But I felt like I learned a lot more, and it wasn't like any sort of accusatory or hostile thing. I just really wanted to. You know, why are you trimming my horse's foot that way? Why are we using these shoes this time instead of these other shoes? And you just learn so much, and you build a really good relationship. And then also you feel a lot more comfortable asking that vet other questions down the road. So I think it's really good, and a good point, too, to bring out to owners to ask questions of your vet if there's something that you want to know. Don't be scared.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that Jennifer has never had a problem with ever. They're way too long. Hey, guys, we are running out of time, and I know there were some other things that we needed to cover, but we'll have to wait until a future time. So I appreciate you being here actually so soon after getting back. I know you, Dr. Jones, especially, you sound tired.
I'm exhausted.
I appreciate you being here. I do have seen you all talk about any of the good stuff. I just want to ask, what is the best drink in Austin, Texas? San Antonio, yeah, sorry.
Well, I would say that a lot of the people I was hanging out with had a really big thing for the prickly pear margaritas at the Little Rhine Steakhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, there's an agreement. On that note, have a great Thanksgiving, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Of course, it's thehorse.com, and you can find Dr. Jones at
FloridaEquine.com with Florida spelled out.
You got it. All right. Thank you very much, guys. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Glenn.
Thanksgiving.
For updates from AAP on thehorse.com.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, they're always a lot of fun. It's nice to have them here. I was really surprised that they agreed to be here after just getting home last night.
I know. It was such a grueling conference in a lot of ways, particularly if you actually attend all the sessions like they appear to have done, which is great.
Yeah, and Dr. Jones said she doesn't get much sleep. She goes out all night and then goes to sessions all day. I guarantee you she caught some cat naps during some of those sessions because they're not all exciting.
Not all of them have Santa hats with lights on them.
No. Well, Lynn, this has been a pleasure for me. I am so glad that you were able to join us today. And, you know, I just want to wish you and your husband a beautifully quiet Thanksgiving at home with your horses.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for having me. For me, like I said, it really just started the holiday off right. And I love the show. I'm honored to be a guest host. And I hope you and your family have a great, great Thanksgiving, too, and a good time on your trip as well.
Well, thank you. We plan to, and Jamie, I know, is down in Florida right now and is down there with her family, I think her side, actually, for this particular trip. So the best to them down there. And all of you out there, give your horses an extra hug. Give them an extra carrot or two. You know what? One of the things we used to do on Thanksgiving and Christmas is we always made a hot bran mash for the horses.
Oh, that's neat.
So that was kind of our way of, we made sure we had bran mash, and it was our way of saying thank you. We always mixed up some apples and some carrots in it.
Aww.
And you know, it was our way of being thankful for the horses and make sure they had their holiday treat, too. So if you have some bran mash laying around, make some for Jennifer and I, and for all of us at the Horse Radio Network. We wish you and your families a very happy Thanksgiving, and you can visit Lynn's website at
www.lopetx.org.
That's Lope. Dot, what is it again?
Lope, LOPETX.org. So LOPETX.org.
And the TX is for Texas.
That's correct.
All right. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you,
everybody. Have a great holiday, and we'll see you back here live on Monday. But don't forget the recorded shows the next couple days. You're going to enjoy them. We had a blast doing them.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.